So it's 2009, 10 years ago, right? And I need to pinch myself. Does everybody know what that means, by the way, pinch myself? It means like it's too good to be true. I have to make sure I'm not dreaming. I have to pinch myself because I'm at ApacheCon 2009 in New Orleans. And I'm getting a kiss from this lovely lady, Delia. And I'm just having the best old time, right? And I'm so happy about it. Our company was a sponsor, along with, I think, HP and Microsoft and Yahoo and these other amazing companies. But not only were we a sponsor, but we were the platinum sponsor, right? We were our name was everywhere. It was such a big deal, right? And because we were the platinum sponsors, I was actually staying in the presidential suite at the top of the Marriott on Canal Street, right? And it was like just this embarrassingly palatial suite. And I would have big parties for the Apache VIP people, and I would host meetings in my, you know, at my formal dining table where we could spread out our papers and take care of business. And I was in town with a bunch of colleagues, 12 colleagues from around the world, from four different continents. And look at this guy. I love this guy. You can see the beads that we were giving out. We were throwing these beads everywhere in New Orleans. I say there were 12 of us from four different continents. We had India, we had Italy, we had New Zealand, and we had people from around the United States. And we were there, and many of us were presenting. Mr. Capilotto here. We were presenting and participating and just having a great time at the conference. And at the moment when I knew I needed to pinch myself, I was actually sitting in the Howling Wolf Jazz Bar. And we had just finished a funeral march for proprietary software. So we partnered with another great open source company, Brain Food, out of Austin, Texas, and we had built a large coffin, 6 or 7 feet, wooden coffin, and to the coffin we affixed the logos of all of our favorite proprietary competitors, so Oracle and Microsoft and SAP. So it was their coffin, right? And they were dead, and we were having their funeral march, and open source was going to be the new life of the industry. We hired a band. There were easily 100, maybe 200 people. And Canal Street in downtown New Orleans was blocked off. So we had permits from the police. We had barricades set up. The whole street was blocked. We had police on motorcycles giving us an escort while the band played, and we had the Oracle coffin and marched it all the way down the street. It was totally epic. And we got to the Howlin' Wolf Jazz Club, where we had arranged sort of food and drink and music for a couple hundred of our closest open source friends. And we were having a party, and it dawned on me as I looked around at my hot wax colleagues, you know what? Like, this is our party. Like, we're here facilitating this. This is incredible. I'm so thankful for this, right? And so I've kind of flashed back, thinking about what got me here, right? And I flashed back to about 14 years before that, to about 1995. And I was living in Monterey, California, and I was a student, and I was going to school. I had just finished my first year of school in Monterey. And I was putting myself through school, so in the summer I had to work so I could earn money to pay for school. And I had figured out a couple of options for jobs, right? So as I drove out to that Highway 1, I had the choice to turn either north and go up to Alaska and work on a fishing boat. That was the first option, very manly, good way to earn money. Alaska's beautiful, it seemed like one good option. Or I could turn south and go to Los Angeles, where I had the opportunity to do an internship. So I ended up turning south. And it really forever changed my life, because there I discovered the two things that would really shape the course of my career. Little did I know at the time, you know, for the next decades. And I discovered those two things, which were the internet and open source software. And so I went down to this internship. It was one of the first internet startups. It was called virtualvegas.com, appropriately enough. And these guys were creating gambling online. It was still really early days. We were making CD-ROMs and internet content, trying to figure out which one was going to be the winner. You know, bandwidth was low, and it was very early days. And these guys ultimately didn't succeed with their gambling website. But I did find the internet and open source software. And when I found the internet and realized that I could use it to learn about it, right? It's kind of meta. But I could use the internet to go learn how the internet worked. And all the information was free. And there was a community of people that was happy to talk me through the things that they had learned and share all the information that they had and experiment with me and try new stuff out. And I just found this wealth of information that I couldn't get enough of, right? I was just thirsty to learn everything I could. And so I did. And I went back to Monterey sort of, you know, newly armed with this great information and understanding. Just couldn't be more excited about the internet and open source software. Very gung-ho, 20 years old. Now, I want to give you a little bit of background here so you'll understand what happens next. But the background is a little bit about me. I'm the youngest of three kids, and so I'm always the baby of the family, right? My mom still calls me Mikey. My dad is like a Marine, right? He was a captain in the Marine Corps, and he took care of stuff. He didn't need anybody's help. He got it done, no problem. My brother is 10 years older, right? He's an Eagle Scout. He's always prepared. He doesn't need any help with anything. He'll get it done. My sister is an accomplished musician and an educator. She was often my babysitter. Like, she didn't need my help getting it done. I was just the baby, right? And my only job was just to look cute. So, there we go. This is deep. This is a cathartic moment for me to get these pictures off my chest a little bit. The Italians may recognize that this is a Puccini. This is Madame Butterfly. I had a budding career as an opera star when I was a little kid. But really, you know, like all great artists, like, I just wanted to be understood. I wanted to be important and have people care about what I thought, right? So I think I had a little bit of a complex, right? I had a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. No one asks me about the hard questions. Like, no one involves me in the difficult family discussions. Like, I don't get to help choose what kind of car we're going to buy or where we're going to go on vacation, because I'm just the baby of the family, right? And so learning all that I learned about the internet and open source software at that internship in LA meant a lot to me when I returned back to Monterey. And so I went to the president of my university and I said, "Hey, Dr. Gard, you've got to let me build the school a website, you know?" And he said, "Okay, go for it." So I did. And we created the web services division at the school and, you know, set up a bureaucracy and hired positions. But at that point, it was not interesting for me. And so I started doing kind of consulting on my own. And so I was going around town seeing who knew about the internet and what they wanted to do with it. So there was this one day that I was sitting at a conference table. And across from me were two kind of old conservative business guys, right? They were so old that they were like as old as I am now, right? So. And I'm 20 years old, right? I have blue hair, right? I have a pierced tongue. I have my Doc Martin combat boots on, and I have my fresh tattoo, right? And I'm sitting across the table from these two old guys, and they're scared because they don't understand what to do. Like, they know the internet is here, and it's coming for them and their businesses, but they don't know what the hell to do with it, right? But you know what? I knew what to do with it. And so for me, it was this cathartic moment of realizing that I wasn't just the baby of the family anymore, and that I actually had an opportunity to contribute to serious problems and their solutions, right? And help people think through real business issues and achieve their goals and strategy. And it really just effectually gave me some feeling of meaning. Like, I felt, oh wow, I could do something that would be meaningful and helpful for people, and isn't that all we all really want to do anyway, right? So that was a pretty important moment for me, and it definitely shaped my career from that point forward. And I know that, you know, I know that you all have a moment like that too. Like, each of us in here had probably remembers when they first discovered the internet, and then probably remembers when they realized what open source was about and they could get their hands on it and take it apart and look at it and start to think about what you could do with it and the problems you could solve with it. So the community, the role that the community plays in that, it just cannot be underestimated, right? I mean, the information's one thing, but then we start reaching out to other people who are using the same tools, and we start comparing notes and sharing ideas. And ultimately, it's that community that made it possible for that sort of blue-haired kid with the pierced tongue to get traction to the point where he was willing to commit now the more than half of my life, right, to this stuff. All because of that moment at the conference table with my pierced tongue and the scared old men. So the community is key. I want to flash forward now to Ephraim, Utah. This is not actually Ephraim, Utah, but it's a lot like this. I thought it would serve as a visual aid. So I had, you know, started my company not quite 10 years before. This was probably 2005 or 6. And I was in Ephraim, Utah. There's a population of about 5,000. And just the most unexpected place you could imagine. But I was at a software meetup. And we were building all kinds of web applications, and we were tinkering with the idea of building our own framework. And we came upon this thing, Open for Business. And so we're like, well, let's take a look at that. And we pretty quickly liked it. You know, we thought, well, we could try to build our own thing, but look at this, it's already done. Maybe we should just check this one out and potentially embrace it. So we used the mailing lists and a telephone call here or there to start to get in touch with the people who are in the OFBiz community and start to build relationships and start working on the project a little bit. And then this meetup came about. So it happened to be close to us. We were in Salt Lake City. But when we got there to this cow town, right, there were people from Thailand, you know, a Dutch guy who'd flown in from Thailand. And there was an Indian guy. And there were, you know, people from all over the world in this funny little town in the middle of nowhere to talk about this totally esoteric technology, right? And excuse me, I'm just going to grab this. But to me, that's like, you see that community, like the dynamic potential for having those human relationships. Because how else would you end up in such an unlikely place to talk about such a specific topic with a hand-selected group of experts who are interested in furthering this thing, right? It's just, it's kind of unbelievable. It's like a science fiction novel or something. And so you know, with the friends that we made there, the conversations continued. And within a couple of years, you know, a bunch of us who had been at that meetup were all working together in the same company. So we'd joined forces with another company, and we'd made relationships with other key individuals and brought them in. And, you know, by 2007 or so, we were really established with OFBiz. We had made a clear investment and commitment to OFBiz, and we were kind of off to the races. So I love that example of the power of community. And in the most unlikely of places, we were able to forge these bonds that, you know, over 10 years later now, consist of really the DNA of our company and what we're doing. So that's a good example of community. Community is not always smooth and flawless. So I want to share one of our mistakes with you too, and the lessons that we learned. So Kickstarter, we all know Kickstarter. They help bring creative projects to life, right? That's their mission. And I love that. I love Kickstarter as a community. You know, you can find something that interests you. You can participate by contributing, or you can put up your own project. They have $4 billion in pledges to date, 16 million backers, and about 450,000 projects. So they're doing great. And I know some of you in here know this, but some of you might not know that Hot Wax is the company that built Kickstarter. Almost. Okay? We had a personal relationship with one of the founders. And so they came to us very early on, and we, you know, went to New York and met with them and their investors in fancy clubs in Manhattan. And we engaged contractually, and we started working on the project together to build it. We even had stock. But over the course of the project, it deteriorated. And while I don't want to say it was only our fault, because to be fair, there was a bit of blame to be shared around, but all that we can control is our own role in it, and our own role was not great, and we blew it. I think essentially we just kind of got cocky. So my analysis is that the people who were directly involved with the project day to day got lazy and cocky, and so we weren't going that extra mile to take care of the personal relationships and essentially the community dynamic that was required to successfully build this thing. And so because we were lax and because we were cocky, we let it get away from us to the point where it turned into a problem, and ultimately we lost the project. So, very sad. The communities don't just take care of themselves, right? Like all good relationships, they require some maintenance and some work and some support and some effort. So what is it then that makes a good community? You know, left to my own, I think of things like a common set of beliefs, you know, a diverse group of people, so we get lots of different ideas and opinions, and a willingness to participate. The people in the community, they need to take a role and be involved and be active. I think there's a very important place for empathy as well. I don't know if you guys saw Ruthie's presentation the other day, but the idea of bringing empathy into your community interactions is just vital. It's what makes people, you know, good people, if you want to sum it up. So lots of diversity, lots of empathy, lots of participation, a common set of beliefs and goals. And here at Apache, you know, we call it the Apache way, the culture of the thing and how we work and interact. We might say there's earned authority, a community of peers, consensus decision-making and responsible oversight, not overwrite, sorry, responsible oversight. And I think those are kind of the bones of Apache and the reason that Apache's here now 20 years later, and I'm sure it will be here in another 20 years, you know? It's because the fundamental mechanisms stand the test of time because they just always work regardless of the changing content or subject matter or individuals. So we say that that's what makes it successful. How do we measure it? I just kind of focused in on this one. It's comments and code and how the volume has grown over all these years at the ASF. I'll just share a few of these high-level stats because they're kind of impressive and mind-blowing. So 200 million lines of code in the ASF. And I think about half of that is OFBiz. and then you've got a few other projects. The people who use Apache software, it's like Netflix, it's Uber, it's Facebook, it's Adobe. I mean, you name it. Every internet-connected country in the world has, you know, interacted with Apache and used Apache software. There are 334 projects. That's always an interesting one to me. Another 48 incubating podlings. 35 different programming languages. 7,000 committers, right? And we're about 20 years old, just over 20 years old, and estimated at over 20 billion with a B worth of software in this foundation. So that's a pretty big deal. And I think those numbers are a really good indication of success. I mean, that's one really good, you know, way to benchmark it and see what's happening and measure the success. But there's a whole lot more to it than just the numbers, right? Have any of you heard about the Rat Park study by chance? I just put that guy there because he's so freaky looking. This is the real rat. So, you want to see the freaky one again?
Yeah.
Because what is going on with that? Okay. So, in the Rat Park study, it was done in the 1970s. And it had a lot to do with addiction, right? Like heroin and opioids and whatever, right? Hard drug addiction. This guy was Dr. Bruce Alexander, who ran the study. So he started by taking two rats and putting them in different cages, each in their own cage, and giving them each two water bottles. And in one of the water bottles, we just had plain water that the rat could drink. And in the other water bottle, we had the addition of some addictive drug, like I think it was morphine or heroin or something, right? And so these rats, both of them, when they were left on their own and isolated, they would go to the water that had the drugs in it, and they would drink so much water with drugs that they would overdose and die, and they would just kill themselves, right? From too much drugs. And so the scientist had the thought, like, I wonder if it's the drugs, or I wonder if it's the setting of the experiment. So he built this thing that everybody now refers to as the Rat Park, right? So he made a big cage where there were all kinds of things for the rats to do and play with, and he put lots of rats together in the park so that they could hang out with each other, and they could play and have sex and run around and do whatever rats do, healthy socially, right? And then they put the same two water bottles in there, the regular water and the water with drugs. And for the rats in the Rat Park experiment, like, none of them overdosed and died. Some of them would take the drugs, and so they didn't completely avoid the drugs, but they didn't take the drugs to the point where they were sick and overdosed, and rather they just drank the regular water. You would think, it seems, because they were having so much fun playing with all the other rats, right? So to me, that stands out as a pretty clear example of how the power of a community can overpower even something like a drug addiction, right? So the importance of community for a healthy human being, I think, can't be understated. We need our communities so we can take meaning and find value in our own lives. And that's equally or more important at the ASF in this software context. So without the community and the play and the interaction with other individuals, like, what's the point anyway, right? So yeah, the strong community support leaves us all feeling appreciated and engaged, recognized. So back to some benchmarks, just to talk about HotWax and OFBiz specifically for a minute. In 2018, we've been using this vehicle for contribution that I'm just describing here as a community day. So one Saturday every month, We invite our employees to come in and donate their Saturday to the OF Biz project, and we'll close tickets and squash bugs, or we'll file new issues. We even have one subset of the team assigned to cooking good food, right? So we have a community interaction. It's a community service day. And it's usually a few dozen, maybe 50 people in the office, and we're, you know, cooking and eating and having fun and working on OF Biz and improving the project for the public good, while we're also sort of enriching our own souls while we're at it, right? Building our own community. So in 2018, we've had a community day each month, about 2,500 hours in total that we've contributed this year, 171 patches and 71 issues reported. And this one is something that I'm pretty proud of. You know, if we go back to that ghost town in Ephraim and start the clock there, and then come to today, in that time as a company, we've contributed over 75,000 hours to OF Biz, which is a big accomplishment, and I'm super proud of our team for having done that. You know, we've gone to the effort to lay out our common sort of hot wax way of working with OF Biz and making the expectations and the knowledge clear to everyone, so it's easy for our employees to participate and come make a community contribution. And I have to think those Saturdays are awesome, fun days for everybody who chooses to go. You know you're going to have good food and maybe some good music, and you're going to hang out with your friends and relax, and it's a Saturday, but you're also going to do a lot of really important work and contribute back to this open source project that's so important to our shared livelihoods. So it's pretty cool. Yeah, you can kind of get the idea here. You can see this sort of community. It's about a lot more than just writing code. You know, it's about eating a piece of cake and wishing your friend a happy birthday and spending time together and knowing each other. It also helps in very practical ways. Like, it's not just the hours and the tickets. We're developing human beings within our team to become, hopefully, project committers and PMC members. In OF Biz, and we had a new committer in a totally different project just the other day. Swap Nilmane became a committer in...
PMC.
Yeah, PMC, yeah. So cool. So it's a really healthy place where I think people feel like there's a lot for them to learn and they have an opportunity to grow and contribute. And I think that aspect cannot be undervalued. We don't want to minimize the importance of that, because that's what makes all the rest of it possible, right? Or the human beings just showing up. So I guess we're at about a half an hour, and I would be happy to just see if there are any questions or any discussion. It's a community presentation after all, so if anybody has anything they want to talk about or experiences they want to share where community was important to them, we could do that, and then I'll just wrap it up when we're done. But does anybody have any thoughts to share about, like, outside of the command line or outside of your IDE, what open source has meant? Thanks, Sharon.
So you're talking about the, having the sort of the culture and Apache and things like that. So within your company, did you already have a similar culture? Or I'm trying to find, was there a bit of a change when you sort of started contributing to Apache that you had to do some sort of cultural shift internally? Or was it already pretty much aligned?
It's a really good question. So the company has grown quite a bit in terms of the number of people since about the time that we started being actively engaged with OF Biz. So while we had a cool, inclusive, supportive culture before, I would say, right? I think we've always been sort of a closely knit group of friends who are also colleagues, kind of a thing. But as we started to grow in number, it was right in parallel with our experience with Apache. So it kind of all happened together. And I think that really contributed to the culture today. It has really grown up around involvement with Apache. You know, Apache's almost like this, the spine of the body that the culture hangs on, you know? So I think that's the result of timing. I think it's an interesting question to think about, like a big organization that already exists, and for them to make the shift into working a lot with Apache would probably look very different than it looked for us, because we had the benefit of just organically growing the culture simultaneous to our increased involvement with Apache. Anybody, anybody? All right. Well, let me just wrap it up. It's just to say that it's sometimes easy to get lost in the technology side of things. And, you know, from my own experience, when I come to ApacheCon, I read, just to be completely honest, right, I read the titles for the speeches, and I just don't even know what they mean. Right? I mean, like about 80% of them, I'm just like, oh, maybe I've heard of that, or what are they doing there now? Like, and that doesn't mean it's not interesting. I mean, I love to drop in and learn new things, and I always do when I go to someone else's presentation, but it's very technical in nature, which is great and important, but it's not the only thing. So my goal here with this presentation has just been to highlight the fact and ask each of you especially not to forget about the importance of the human side of things when you're building these technology solutions and you're, you know, up to your eyeballs in command line code and whatever else. Try to remember that, you know, think back to that kid with the blue hair and the pierced tongue sitting at the conference table with the nervous old guys, right? Like, that kid's out there somewhere right now, right? There's some 20-year-old with blue hair who's trying to figure this out right now. And the way that it happens is through the willingness and the openness and the inclusiveness of this community. So I just, like, ask you all to keep showing up, you know, and remember that human aspect as you're going into this ASF experience. Thanks.